All right, we're here to talk about veins filled with fluid that's red or something. I don't know, this movie needs an enema. We're talking about Dracula Dead and loving it. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are not only talking about the final film that we are covering for All About Mel, but Mel's final directorial project, his final directorial effort, Dracula, Dead and Loving It. My name is Drew, and I love Mel Brooks, but I need my cohort who is obsessed with a particular medical procedure. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I might be like the lone Dracula Dead and Loving It fan. I saw this movie in theaters. I have loved this movie for 31 years, and it's... Well, the weird thing about this movie to me is it's not even that I felt like people just hate it. I felt like no one saw it. No one gave it any attention. And like no one ever talks about it. Like when Mel Brooks comes up, it kind of like just doesn't get brought up.
Yeah, I will say this was my first time watching this movie. My wife, who is a huge Mel Brooks fan and has watched every Mel Brooks movie multiple times, this was only her second time seeing it, if that says anything about about this particular film. So where, you know, we've had, of course, a lot of his parody movies between Blazing Saddles, parodying Westerns, Young Frankenstein, parodying Frankenstein specifically, as well as some other horror movie stuff. But let's be real, it's mostly Frankenstein. Then later on with Spaceballs and Robin Hood Men in Tights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It makes everything on paper about this movie looks great. It's Mel Brooks parodying vampire movies and bringing in Leslie Nielsen himself to play Count Dracula,
which is the perfect casting choice to me.
It is on paper,
on screen.
So I'm going to go through some of the other cast, because this is the thing. This cast is pretty good. You, of course, have Leslie Nielsen as Dracula. Mel himself plays Van Helsing. Peter McNichol plays Renfield, which is...
Who I love Peter McNichol.
I love Peter McNichol, too. He's great. Steven Weber, who, like, that's a name that, like, I know who Steven Weber is, but a lot of people, I feel like, don't. He was on Wings. He was on... he was in the other version of The Shining.
The one I prefer.
The one that Stephen King prefers.
Rob Lowe in it.
Is Rob Lowe in that too?
I can't remember. Rob Lowe's in one of those TV miniseries in the 90s, I feel like.
You have Amy Yazbek returning from Robin Hood Men in Tights as Mina. And of course, you have Harvey Korman as Dr. Seward, which I'm going to be honest, I was about halfway through this movie before I realized that was Harvey Korman.
That's funny.
And because just because he was... He plays so differently than he played in any of Mel's movies 20 years before. So it's just, he looked different. He felt different. And he was playing it a little straighter, but once that clicked, it's like, oh yeah, no, this is absolutely Harvey Korman. You've also got, of course, Anne Bancroft as the gypsy woman in the village at the beginning of the movie, as just a fun little bit.
And she is so funny.
As it just keeps going on and on,
like,
and on.
And I think that's so, I mean, obviously I'm a massive fan of Young Frankenstein. I love horror comedies. And I love celebratory horror comedies that seem to be kind of I guess like they're finding the brevity and the silliness in these things, but it doesn't feel as pointed and mean natured as like Spaceballs does towards Star Wars. Like Frankenstein and Dracula are kind of being lovingly spoofed, whereas like I feel like Spaceballs has always been kind of more malicious towards Star Wars. And I know I'm not alone in that opinion.
I can see that take for sure. Yeah, it's mostly for me that this is like everything looks like it's going to work. The casting is good. The performances in this movie are good. It's just it doesn't get past a giggle. You know what I mean? Like
I don't know. I'm laughing pretty much this entire movie. I this movie's hilarious.
I get a
but I'm a massive Leslie Nielsen fan. And I love Young Frankenstein. I love Robin Hood Men in Tights because there is and this could be why this movie doesn't work quite as well, because unlike Robin Hood Men in Tights that feels a lot more of an on location thing, this kind of goes back to some of the old Mel Brooks styling things where it kind of feels almost like a stage play that's being filmed.
Yeah, I can definitely see
like
that.
Like the set design, all of that is very much a stage production quality. And that's not the case in, you know, like Men in Tights or even Young Frankenstein, despite the fact that there is a lot of staginess to those old Mel Brooks productions. This one feels almost like it probably should have been made 30 years prior as a result. So I think part of this movie is it feels a little bit at a time and for some people in a derogatory way, because in 1995, this kind of production, no one's doing that. And not because they like can't, it's that they feel like we've moved past it. And I've always enjoyed the staginess of a Mel Brooks production. And like, I know we both have some sort of theater background. And so like, I never get upset kind of seeing that kind of style, but we also grew up on those older movies that did kind of have a staginess to them, like whether it be through reruns or, you know, our parents showing them and stuff. So I think for me, like that barrier to entry for Dracula Dead and Loving It is just not there for me. Like I'm in, and it helps that like, you know, it's obviously based on Bram Stoker's Dracula, but I think more prominently based off the recently popular Oscar nominated Francis Ford Coppola Bram Stoker's Dracula film from 92.
Yeah, I don't know how he kept the hat on that entire movie. Such a silly, like, again, it's a silly joke in this movie. It's like they went back to the well a little too much for that. But okay, so let's talk about
are you talking about Dracula's hat?
Yeah. It was funny the first time when they didn't point it out, but the second time
but this is the thing with Mel Brooks. We talked about this with High Anxiety too, is like where they have these jokes that are really good the first time. And I love a recurring joke, but
I'm a firm believer in the rule of threes, but
in a single film, yes, obviously it's something like Arrested Development where you have a recurring gag, it works.
Sure.
But yes, I mean, I think three is at most what you should do unless you've got a really, really great idea.
But so yeah, let's talk about the stuff that worked. We've got, the Peter McNichol as Renfield is doing some really good physical comedy throughout this entire movie.
Do you think he got hired because of Ghostbusters 2?
I don't know. Because I wonder
he's
that.
Kind of playing Janosch a little bit.
A bit.
Although I wish he, and even there's a connection. You are like the buzzing of flies to him.
Yeah, but he's doing some really good physical work that is just working for me. And as he gets into being less the British prim and proper guy and more into the actual like Dracula servant Renfield, it's even funnier.
Mm-hmm.
But then he disappears for 45 minutes. And I know that's the story, that there's only so much you can do.
Correct. That is Dracula.
But it's like, I kind of wish they had found an excuse to have him kind of come back and do some stuff, because...
Mm-hmm. No. I absolutely agree with that.
Similarly, I do think that Leslie Nielsen is good as Dracula. I think he carries it well. I just feel like there's something off about Mel Brooks's writing and Leslie Nielsen's performance.
I was about to say, I think the writing underserves Nielsen specifically. Leslie Nielsen is a phenomenal comedic actor. He was a serious actor who became a comedic actor with Airplane and then The Naked Gun. That became his career. But the man understood timing. I think he also kind of went to the Betty White school of comedy, where she says, I'm not funny. I just practice very, very hard.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel the same. I feel kind of similarly about Nielsen. And I think the dialogue that he's given or the scenes that he's giving do not always serve what he can do. And I do agree that in terms of some of the character writing, it is a lot weaker than other Mel Brooks productions. It's certainly weaker than Young Frankenstein, and it's weaker than Robin Hood to some degree. But I also think it's a lot stronger than people give it credit for. But I think Dracula being inconsistently and frankly too goofily written, he's the straight man, but they make him too cartoony. There's some great stuff and there's some good gags when they do it, but I think the tonal inconsistency with Dracula is what I think fails this movie sometimes to some people.
Because even the first scene he's in, we have the funny gag with the shadow walking down the stairs.
The shadow gags were always good.
They go on a little too long.
They're always good when it's fun. After he fell down the stairs and the shadow's just like, ugh.
That was good. That was good. But
that
but,
one's great. But the also fact, the but one the fact when that,
the fact that he, the fact that he is that he falls down the stairs because he slips on bat poop is just like, come on.
But that's the kind of stuff Mel Brooks loves. He loves a good like cartoon gag like that. I mean, it's present in every single one of his movies. Whether or not it lands is a different story, but like he's always got these very juvenile plays, whether it's Roll in the Hay or something like that.
Roll,
like
roll in the hay.
No, I again, I agree. Is that the funniest thing he could have done? No, but do I still laugh? Absolutely.
Fair.
Because
fair.
For most folks, this really does. It follows the Dracula story. There's not a whole lot of variance in terms of the kind of plot points.
And like, as a result, there's also just not a whole lot of characters. Like,
and that is the problem, I think, with this production, is it does. Again, it feels like a very small stage production. You have a very tight cast. You have a handful of sets, and that's about it. What they do with it, I think, is really funny and really fun, because again, it's having a lark with a Dracula story, and I'm a sucker for that, you know. And I kind of wish that he hadn't waited till what has become, I guess, the end of his film directorial career to do this, because I honestly would have loved to see several Mel Brooks Universal Monster movies. I would have loved to see him do Creature and The Mummy.
And I bet we would have had this movie done better. So this movie releases in December of 95 on a budget of $30 million and had a box office of $10 million. That is a huge, huge drop.
Yes. I was just going to say, it's a stark contrast, because I think last week you mentioned that Robin Hood in Tights was not a big hit, but it was. I looked at the numbers, and Robin Hood in Tights cost $20 million and made $72 million.
And did even better in video.
And did gangbusters at home. So I think there was an expectation for this to do much better than it did. And I mean, yeah, this movie was a straight up bomb. And I'm kind of surprised it didn't have a strong opening weekend. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the trailer back in the day. It's not the best. It's a little too screwball. Like, it starts off with the sequence of Leslie Nielsen rising from the grave and smacking his head on the chandelier.
Which is a fun gag. That's a fun
gag.
Which
is a fun gag, but then, like, the problem is the trailer makes everything look so screwball, and, like, I kind of wish it had played a little bit more with the format.
We either need to have way more screwball comedy or way more, like, jokes on jokes, but so much of this movie is really just played straight, which... I guess you could say that about some of the others, but
I mean, Young Frankenstein's played straight, you know, in a lot of ways. Most of his stuff is. That's what makes it funny, is like Mel Brooks is playing it straight for most of High Anxiety until they get to the airport.
Yeah,
and then it's Variety Hour with Madeleine Kahn, which I have no complaints whatsoever. I think here, especially the women, are given nothing to do, and there's stuff for those women to do in this story, and especially when you have the talent they did, it felt like, I don't know, it just kind of felt like their characters were a little shrugged off, and I don't know, I mean like I said, I absolutely see the problems with this movie, but there's also so many fun bits. I love when Renfield is in the asylum, and then this guy, you know, opens the little like food tray door at the bottom and talks about how insane everything is and how it's just driving him mad. You think, oh, it's another patient. No, he's the guard.
He's the guard. That is also Rudy DeLuca, who we have seen in Mel Brooks movies before. He was the hitman in High Anxiety, and he is also the co-writer of a number of Mel's movies, including this movie and I believe Men in Tights as well.
And I always love the kind of non sequiturs where like, oh God, she's dead now. No, she's not. She's alive. She's Nosferatu. She's Italian.
It's a funny joke. It's a funny joke. It's a great Mel Brooks joke.
It's a classic Mel Brooks style.
I needed 30 more in this movie.
I love the meeting between Renfield and Dr. Stewart is so much fun.
The one where they're trying to release him and he's just sneaking eating bugs the entire time.
The entire time. It's so good.
That is all on Peter McNichol. Peter McNichol is so good at this.
Throwing himself and I mean, also for me, a classic scene is the killing of Lucy.
Okay, so let's talk about the killing of Lucy, because this scene is one of Mel Brooks's personal favorite scenes he's ever directed.
So this is also probably, I would say, the one scene that people, even then they don't like it, they point to this scene and like, hey, this worked.
This, because it did. It really did. So Lucy, who is Dr. Seward's daughter, who is, she has turned. She has turned into a vampire, and she is quote unquote dead. But they go to, you know, make sure she stays dead with the stake and all of that, and they open her coffin and they put the stake in, and they hit it, and it is a wave of blood. It is so much so blood.
He plays it with such perfection.
Oh, like, yeah.
I mean, just the perfect reaction of just like, WTF.
And I don't think they could have done multiple takes of that. It would have taken so much if he had screwed that take up. And then it's only in a little bit. So Helsing is like, you got to keep going. And he hits it again. And another wave of blood. And then again, and a third huge wave of blood. And apparently, right after that, Brooks yells cut. And the set erupts with laughter because it's the funniest thing that they've ever seen.
Well, that in the next scene, it's like, well, he's got blood on you and you have a drop on you. And it's like, I can't remember exactly what it says, but it's location, location, location. Yeah. I mean, that is classic Mel Brooks. And even before that, the scene when Lucy is trying to seduce Jonathan Harker, and he's kind of, you know, trying to push her off, and he's like, you know, Lucy, you're not even British, but these are. Like, I mean, just there's so many great classic moments.
Earlier in the movie where he's talking about all of this, you know, really like lusty stuff, this naughty stuff, and he's like, ah, yes, she's this, she's this, she's this. All these things I've tried, I've worked to suppress.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great lines, and maybe it's, I mean, I'm a vampire fanatic. I'm a huge fan of Dracula, so any kind of vampire comedy or Dracula comedy is gonna get my attention. I mean, and I've seen some of the best, I've seen some of the worst, and I've seen some of the indiest, like Jesus Christ Vampire Slayer, real movie.
I believe it. That sounds fully real.
Exist. Remember Funny Life of that. But this also has a cast that has, you know, and people that I love dearly. I mean, Leslie Nielsen, again, one of my all-time faves. And seeing him as Dracula.
Harvey Korman is really good in this. And
Korman's great.
And
his character gets underserved is the enema joke is never really given anything to it.
And because it's not very funny. It's
funny if there's a reason for it. But, like, there's not. The first time, it's kind of funny. And then he keeps talking about enemas. And it's one of those jokes that, like, stays unfunny until, like, the very last time. And then it's kind of funny again. It's that kind of Seth MacFarlane kind of thing.
Yeah, but it doesn't work here. And
I think it
counts on the concept of an enema being more funny than it actually is.
Well, that is a feature in several Mel Brooks productions, to be perfectly honest.
Fair. Yeah, because again, like I said, I keep going back. On paper, this movie is excellent.
Like, he's a doctor of rare diseases as well as a man of theology and philosophy and gynecology. Oh, I didn't know you had a hand in that too. Like, there's so many
it's a good joke. It's a good joke. But this is the thing. And like I say, yes, a lot of Mel's movies are played straight with comedy bits in them. But this one is maybe the ratio's off. Something's off. And I can't exactly nail down what it is. It just...
Like I said, the vibe of the production and Dracula being severely underwritten, and the movie itself being pretty underwritten, if I have to be honest, I think... is the main reason a lot of people just don't jive with this movie. But I think, like, if you can go into the movie and just not put any of that pressure and just let it be just a silly Dracula comedy, and I think the problem is especially after Robin Hood Men in Tights, but also, like, because this is at this point Mel Brooks has had a very lengthy successful career, there is a little bit of like, well, we expect more.
And this is where I want to talk about 1995. This movie came out at the end of 1995.
Mm-hmm.
1995 featured the following films. Friday came out in 1995.
Yep.
Mallrats came out in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Clueless came out in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Bad Boys. Yes, the first Bad Boys movie was in 1995.
Which is kind of crazy because, like, for whatever reason, I assigned that movie and Clueless, I don't know why, to 97. Doesn't make any sense, but I don't know how to do.
But if we're talking about just straight comedies, 1995 was the debut year for both Billy Madison and Tommy Boy.
Yes.
This has been a crazy, crazy year, not only for comedy, but for new voices in comedy.
And there is that. And like, I mean, Tommy Boy was a modest, very modest hit. It cost 20, made 32.
But
home video. Release for that one. Yeah, on video, this thing, I mean, this was, look, if you're plus or minus 3 years to Drew and I, this movie had a chokehold on kids in the 90s.
I regularly, often only in my head, quote Billy Madison all the time.
And same with Billy Madison, which was another modest. Well, yeah, but both of them were modest hits.
Yes.
And they were both like, yes, like you said, new voices. You have, you know, Chris Farley and David Spade. I guess Spade was a little bit older at that point, but like, and then you have Norm Macdonald and Adam Sandler. And what's the other guy in that group? Is it Darren McGavin? No. I can't remember. He plays one of Billy's friends and is in a ton of Happy Madison stuff.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
He's in Grandma's Boy, I think.
Yeah. And then they don't work together anymore because he overstepped his bounds and something happened, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. So that's a whole other thing.
But, I didn't know that.
Yeah. They don't work together anymore. But what I'm saying is when you have all of these, like, I'm going to use this term, incredible comedy movies coming out ahead of, like, Billy Madison was in February of 95. You've got this entire year of Billy Madison coming out. Tommy Boy, let's see when Tommy Boy was. Tommy Boy was in March of 95. Billy Madison and Tommy Boy were just a month apart coming out into movie theaters.
Oh, that's crazy.
God, that's crazy. But you have all of that, and you have huge, well, I say huge years for that, but the video releases, which were probably not until 96, let's be fair, but
I mean, 95 was a crazy year anyway. I mean, you look at the top 10 grossing movies and you're like, oh, we were in a different world. Like the top 10 were going from 10 to 1 were Jumanji, Waterworld, Casper, 7, Batman Forever, Pocahontas, GoldenEye, Apollo 13, Toy Story, and Die Hard with a Vengeance. Like, it was a different time.
Yeah, but also GoldenEye was that year. We have so many new takes on things. And when it comes to critics at the time, because I do think critical reception really hurt this movie.
Oh, yeah, one particular.
Roger Ebert did not like this movie. And his review, I don't know that the review was scathing, but apparently there was an incident between Ebert and Mel.
Yeah, Mel did not take Ebert's criticism very well at all.
Either that or Mel was doing his, like, self-deprecating thing that can sometimes come off as real.
I think it was probably both. I think he was probably hurt by it, but... You know, not especially with certain theatrical folks, they're not always the thickest skins. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah, but when I bring up the rest of 1995 to kind of talk about like how when you couch it all, and again, the last movie he did, like Robin Hood Men in Tights, wasn't that groundbreaking. It was just charming in a way that this movie wasn't, and that charm goes a long way. And when you have that lack of charm. And you don't have a real good belly laugh other than one really good one, with the blood spray, which I'm going to be honest. I've seen it before. I've seen it probably in projects that came after this movie. So whether they were influenced by Dracula Deading loving it or not, I've seen the gag. So it didn't land for me quite as much as it maybe would have in 95.
Sure. I mean, that's a fair take for you, but it's also, I'm glad you at least put the caveat out there because I always push back against people who, and I'm not talking about you, but I always push back about against this idea of like, oh, well, I've seen this before when talking about the thing that kind of originated it, whether it be a Die Hard or Halloween or something like that, where it's like, oh, well, yeah, I've seen these action things. I'm like, yes, but like everything that you think is cliche about this movie started it. You know, and Dracula Den Loving did not do that. I'm just, I do kind of sometimes push back on that just because it's like, yeah, I understand that. You have to look at it from an academic lens.
You have to look from an academic lens, from a historical lens. But again, that's what I'm saying in this year that has had so many, and not to say that, like, I don't think Roger Ebert liked Tommy Boy very much. I don't know what he thought about Billy Madison either. I bet he didn't like that either.
Oh, I'm sure he hated both of those movies.
But when you have just these sort of this whirlwind comedy year and just this whirlwind year of movies, Toy Story came out in 1995. Like, this was a year of new stuff, and we end the year with Mel Brooks looking tired, and it just doesn't work.
Roger Ebert hated Tommy Boy so much it's on his most hated list. He gave it a 1 out of 4 stars. So, right, that Tommy Boy is one of those movies that plays like an explosion down at the screenplay factory. You can almost picture a bewildered office boy, his face smudged with soot, wandering through the ruins and rescuing pages at random. Too bad they didn't mail them to the insurance company instead of filming them. When Ebert was a phenomenal essayist. When he wanted to be mean to a movie, no one did it better. Sorry, Gene. Like, when Ebert was catty, and I disagree with that man a lot, he knew how to do it.
that's great. That's a great review. But yeah,
I think for me, what works about Dracula Dead and Loving It, because I do want to talk about some of the things that I really enjoy about it, is the cast. What, underrated or not, I think everyone, I don't think anyone performs poorly.
No, I think and that's true.
I actually like the staginess for it. There is something about a good film theatrical production that's always makes me happy. And seeing physical things like in action always work. The problem is they did that, but they also tried to put in some of the kind of newer like CGI. Let's put Leslie Nielsen's head on a bat and see how that works. And it doesn't at all. And I'm someone who loves this movie and defends it quite a bit. And I'm like, that bit does not work.
It would have worked for me had it happened more. That's one that I would have seen.
Had they not done like, I want to say run of the mill gags, like him getting smacked into the window and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That stuff is not as funny. But then stuff of like, oh, the way they defeat Dracula. Well, guess what? Don't worry. Renfield does it himself. That was funny to me. I like the kind of anti-climax to this movie. I think it's very funny. I think that, I don't know, I think some of the jokes just really land. There's a lot of good wordplay, a lot of that classic Mel Brooks, hey, I'm going to hide a joke here, and I'm going to leave it up to the audience to find it. That is one of my favorite things that he does. And that's why, like, you're often like, especially if you're a Mel Brooks fan, you are listening intently to the rhythm of the dialogue and to what they are saying, because he does love his wordplay. And while this movie is inconsistently written and often fails its characters, I don't think it ever fails its jokes. And I think a lot of those written jokes and those kind of dialogue specific jokes really soar in this particular picture. I don't disagree with Drew that there did need to be more big spectacle jokes that elicited the kind of belly laugh that the mausoleum scene does. Now, you know, your mileage may vary. Like, I think it's hilarious when they're on the Demeter and the chains come off of his coffin and he's being whacked back and forth. Did it need more to it to make it work?
The concept was funny, and if it was going to go on that long, it needed to be funnier.
I don't disagree, but I do think that a lot of this movie just really, really works. At least for me. But again, I am a sucker for vampire comedies. I'm a sucker for Dracula stuff.
But it's also one of those things where you saw it as a kid. You look at it with a different lens.
That is hard to ignore. I agree. I did see this when I was 11 years old.
If I saw this movie at 11 or 12, I probably would agree with you that this movie was hilarious. And how could anybody not think this movie was funny? Which is honestly probably a lot of what we thought about Robin Hood Men in Tights at the time. But in retrospect and looking at it, I just think it's a sharper movie. It's a sharper script, which is what it needed. So much of this is just like, it needs like 20% more. If it just had 20% more of whatever was going on at whatever time, we might have had something.
I think that's perfectly fair. Like, again, I know that I am in rare company in my love for this movie. I'm not delusional like other films that I have a love for. But no, that's a 5-star film. On my letterbox, this gets 3.5 stars. I do think it's a 3.5-star film. Which is 7 out of 10. That is a good score. It's a very good score. And probably for most people, way too high for this movie. But I do love it. Like, this movie makes me happy. Is it the best movie? Absolutely not. Is it kind of stupid? Yeah. But you know what? All of these things, even if they half work, and I think this is a testament for me to the power of Mel Brooks. Even a half-assed, not firing all cylinders Mel Brooks movie still makes me laugh, still makes me love it, and still works for me better than half the comedies I see in a given year.
Unless that year's 1995.
Sure. I mean, I can't say I didn't love Billy Madison when I was 11, because I absolutely did. I watched that movie way too much.
Yeah. So yeah, I this is a miss for me, which I do worry that because of its reputation, I was maybe looking for too much wrong with it.
Well, because didn't you say Rebecca like half likes it?
She's only ever seen it one time before.
Yeah, but I remember she saw it and she told me, she's like, "Oh yeah, I didn't hate it." And I'm like, "Okay, well, that's more than I get from most people."
Yeah, I think it's also a movie where you gotta be on the right, gotta be on the right wavelength to really get into it. And when we watched it, maybe that was it too. Maybe when I watched it, I'm just too tired. I'm too critical.
Yeah,
I'm looking for things because I know it's
repeat. Enjoy it. I got some stuff that'll make you enjoy it.
but it's what worked in this movie worked really well. It's just there weren't enough things that worked in this movie. And that's a shame. And it's also a shame that this is the last film he directed.
Now, I do agree with that. This should not have been his last movie. As much as I enjoy it, like, I think it's wild that we don't have a Mel Brooks movie in, it's been, what, 31 years now?
Yeah, I mean, well, how, I mean, he's 100 now.
I know he's 100, but, like, he didn't direct History World Part 2. I know he's done television and stuff like that.
He was 69 making this movie. He was 69. Good Lord. No wonder he didn't direct another movie. He was going to retire.
Well, but, I mean, that's the thing is, like, we can't yell at him too much, because I'm like, even then, I'm like, okay, yeah, you're at retirement age even here.
yeah, like, he was past retirement age making this movie. And, you know, and what did he do after this? Well, not too long after this, he started working on turning The Producers into a Broadway musical. And I don't know if anybody knows about The Producers Broadway musical, but it's a pretty big hit. it's a pretty big deal. And of course, that also got turned into a film version as well.
Which I've actually never seen the film version.
Interesting. I liked it at the time. I don't know how I would feel about it now.
Because I've seen the play on Broadway. Didn't see it with Broderick and Lane. I saw it right after they left.
But I saw it in the West End of London.
Nice.
And it wasn't going to be Broderick because of whatever. It was the dude from what I looked him up the other day. He was the guy on crutches and There's Something About Mary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was going to be, who was it going to be? I think it was going to be Richard Dreyfuss as
that's certainly a choice.
But whoever it was, and I should have looked this up and remembered, but they backed out at the last minute.
Mm.
But because they backed out at the last minute, they needed somebody who could come in and do the role. And they talked Nathan Lane into doing it. So I did get to see Nathan Lane as Max Bialystock.
That's awesome. I love Nathan
in the West
Lane.
End of London.
And the musical is phenomenal. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's a phenomenal musical.
That musical is dangerous because I'll get songs in my head, and those are not songs you want to just be humming out loud when you're at work.
What? Along Came Bialy just doesn't do it for you?
No, it's more Springtime for Hitler.
And Germany. Yeah, I know. And he knew what he was doing because he made that song such a bop.
Oh, and that song, you're like, yeah, and that song I think was in the original movie too. It's
yeah, and I might have been nominated for an Oscar? Was that the original, not the original song, but was that for, I guess it wouldn't have had an original song because none of the songs are original for the Oscars.
Mel won, since you mentioned Oscars, Mel is an EGOT. So he won his first Emmy in 1967 for the Sid Caesar, Imogene Coca, Carl Reiner, Howard Morris special.
I was going to say, was it the Carl Reiner stuff? Yeah.
And then he later won three consecutive Emmys for guest starring on Mad About You in the years 1997, 1998, and 1999. Conveniently, right after Dracula Dead and Loving It bombed in theaters.
Is also very 90s sitcom to get someone like Mel Brooks to pop in there. I mean, Seinfeld had Larry David. You know, yeah. you got guys coming in. Jerry Stiller, stuff like that. Elliot
Gould for
Friends.
Did you say Seinfeld had Larry David?
Yeah.
Larry David wrote on Seinfeld.
I know, but he also appeared on Seinfeld.
So he won his Grammy in 1999 for Best Spoken Comedy Album for The 2000-Year-Old Man in the Year 2000 with Carl Reiner, and then won a different one in 2002.
I need to listen to that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah. His Oscar, he won in 1968 for Best Original Screenplay for The Producers.
Awesome.
The original Producers. And he received an honorary one in 2023. And of course, his Tony Award, sweeping Best Musical, Best Original Score, and Best Book for a Musical for the Broadway version of The Producers.
Which is... yes, it should have won. It's an excellent play. I've seen it locally. I've seen it on Broadway. It is a great play.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan.
It's nice to know that Mel, though his film career ended, he did not. He continued going on, and he continued to work and work and work. Though, interestingly, Brooks Films, his production company, Dracula Dead and Loving It was the last Brooks film for 10 years until The Producers, the musical Producers. And then, weirdly, Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank in 2022, which I...
It's so weird
such a weird thing.
Because he wrote that, didn't he?
Did he? No, he didn't write it.
Yeah, screenplay by, his name's on there. There's like 10 writers, but he's one of them.
And Richard Pryor is on there, though. So
apparently this movie's a loose remake of Blazing Saddles.
No wonder. That's why Richard Pryor and Mel Brooks are on there. Because they co-wrote Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
And of course,
this movie sounds insane.
Yeah, is this the one with Michael Cera?
Michael Cera, Ricky Gervais, George Takei, Gabriel Iglesias, Michelle Yeoh, Samuel L. Jackson, and Mel Brooks.
it's about a dog coming to a cat town. It is just a loose remake of Blazing Saddles, which is funny. When this movie came out, Rebecca and I watched this trailer. They're like, this is just Blazing Saddles. This is just Blazing Saddles. Not realizing that that is exactly what they were going for.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, I almost want to, like, extend All About Mel just to do the newer producers. because we don't really have a plan for September.
Well, you know what, Miles? We do now. Let's make sure it's streaming somewhere.
Drew and I were talking about this. September always seems to be, because, you know, I usually take my vacation. Dragon Con's happening. So there's 2 weeks. We happen to have 5 weeks in, or five Tuesdays in September, which is usually when we record. But yeah, I recently got into a pretty gnarly car accident, and things have been pretty crazy around that. Drew's been super busy. So September, yet again, is going to be kind of a talk nerdy, we'll do whatever we want, play it by ear sort of situation, as sometimes happens.
September by ear.
And I'm looking, and yeah, it's on YouTube for free right now.
Yeah, with ads. Though I pay to not have ads, so I wonder if I'd have ads.
Then you wouldn't have ads, because I've watched movies on there before. I also pay for YouTube, so that covers it.
Let's do it. Producer's musical next week. Mel, we're not done with you, buddy.
We're not done with you yet, even though you didn't technically do this, but you did.
I mean, he was heavily involved.
Was he?
I mean, he executive produced it, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, actually, he co-wrote the screenplay, so.
Yeah, and a lot of the music.
Oh, I mean, the music was already there.
Well, no, I mean, the music for the musical, the Broadway version, he co-wrote a lot of that music.
Yes, yes, yeah, I know that. I also don't think I knew that this movie bombed.
Did it?
It made $38 million on a $45 million budget.
Interesting. Huh. Did not know that.
Yeah. This has been a lot more of a wandering conversation from Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Look,
we were talking about Mel Brooks in general, and this is capping off our month of Mel Brooks, even though it kind of isn't. I am thrilled that we did this, though, because I got to watch two movies that I had not seen before, and they were big holes in my movie watching canon, and so I didn't have a bad time at all. I thought 12 Chairs was excellent. High Anxiety, I really enjoyed. Does fall a little flat sometimes. And then obviously I'm a big fan of Dracula Dead and Loving It. Drew is more on the it fell flat for him, which honestly most people are. I am an anomaly in my love for this movie. But man, did I have a good time with these flicks. As well as, you know, our birthday challenge for Hitchhiker's Guide, which was super fun to do.
All right, gang. Well, that's going to wrap us up. We'll join us back one more time for Mel, producer's musical, next week. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us at TheMoreYouNerd/TheMoreYouNerd on just about every social media platform. You can find us at TheMoreYouNerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode we've ever done. And you can email us, TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. That's TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. Also, check out Cosmic Crit. It's our other show. To find out about it, go to CosmicCrit.com. And if you like it, go to the Cosmic Crit Discord and join me and Miles and talk to us all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, we're going to end the show as we always do with a rousing
nerd
out.
Nerd for y'all.